Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is NRL Boom Rookies.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Boom Rookies presented by ESPN. I am Matt Bungard, and with me today, Nick Campton. Hello.
A merry NRL preseason greeting to you all.
Indeed. So this is the first episode in our series of preseason previews. We've kind of timed this so that we'll get them all out to you just before the Las Vegas games kick off this season proper. We'll sprinkle in some news and notes as we go in the next couple of weeks, and maybe we might even have one more non-rugby league related show for you to come, but wait and see. But for today, as you've seen from the episode description, we will have not one, but two preseason previews to do with you. And it's only fair that we started off with the defending premiers. And joining us to talk about all things Penrith Panthers, Ben Quagliata, hello.
It's going to be a tough defense, but I think I can manage it.
Yep. So,
and Penrith seem to have the momentum of a runaway freight train. Why are they so popular?
I know it's a reference, but I can't finish it. I'm so sorry.
It's all right, mate. Seriously, though, we were joking before we started recording, and you said that you could just take all the stuff that you said last year, update the dates a little bit, change one or two of the names, and it could all be the exact same. After three straight premierships, can you still feel anything, or is it just sort of overwhelmed by the incredible pleasure you've received over the past three seasons?
Yeah, it's tough to find a functioning vein, but like, in all honesty, once we get back into it, once round one hits, I'm sure it'll all come flooding back. At this point, we are still kind of in the neutral zone of like, oh, well, it's all happened. Like, what else is there to gain? But I know once the fellas cross that white line in Wigan, it'll all start over again. And I'm sure, I think the theme is one last ride at this point. So four in a row.
Well, that's interesting that you say that, because like, it's been kind of a common theme, not from you specifically, but from people in general. Maybe it's more hope than anything that they want Penrith to stop being so dominant and so successful. But like, we've now heard this 3 years in a row where they've lost X and Y. They've lost like, and now we're going to, if you win it again this year, we're going to hear it next year with Jerome Luai as well. Like, I'm like, we're a year removed from that, and I can already see it coming over the horizon. But again, like this year, people are already going, oh, you know, they've lost Spencer Linea, they've lost Stephen Crichton. That's another couple of big name players for them. But at this point, you've just got to trust in everything that they're doing there, right? And there's no way that you can really be too concerned about not being able to fill those holes.
I was told Jerome Luai was actually not that important. So that's a really interesting narrative shift that you've just thrown on me. No, I mean, Jack Cogger came in. Everyone thought he was just an Origin warm body, and then he ended up fitting seamlessly. I think at this point it is, you know, it's the system as much as anything. I don't know, system is such a buzzword in not just footy and sports in general, but a lot of the credit does have to go to Ivan and what he's been able to do. It's a bit of heat culture. Don't want to throw it out there too early, but just the way players, these no-names, can just slot so seamlessly in. I think the first year after 21, when there was that kind of, so when they lost Burton, and I think it was just Burton, there might be someone else, I don't remember. You know, that was kind of the trial run for it all, but now it's just like next man up. And it's kind of been the thing for a long time now that this club has aspired to be. They've always been the team that wants to cycle through the next generation. They've always wanted to have that next man up. Whether they saw it coming to this level, I don't think they ever did. Like, that would just be the absolute dream. But yeah, at this point, there's no reason to doubt anything that's happened.
Yeah. Like you say that system's a dirty word. It's not if it works. Like, next man up mentality is the finals equivalent of training the house down. Those cliches actually have power if it works, and it does work for Penrith. Like, I don't know how they've managed to do this. I don't know how they've sort of managed to make all this into a reality, because we've said a few times on the show during their run now, they're defying like decades worth of parameters that are put in specifically to stop this from happening, you know, yeah. And it's shown that they have this absolutely inhuman resolve to keep going and keep going and keep fighting. And I think fighting's the key word. I think this is a team that likes fighting more than it likes winning. So I think they actually like, you know, they like the rough stuff more than they do, you know, winning the trophy and getting the accolades and that. And to me, that's probably their real superpower, you know? And I think that's an aspect of their play that's going to come into vogue a lot more this year, because like Bungard, you said that they have managed to replace all these guys, but when you look at the guys who have left and the guys they've replaced them with, so let's just go Coruscant, Kikau, Crichton, right? That's the three big guys that have left in the last 3 years. All the blokes they've replaced them with are all roughnecks. You know what I mean? Like Coruscant, Kikau, Crichton. I know, like, you know, Crichton and Kikau are big units or whatever, but to me, their skills stood out for them more than their size or their athleticism or anything like that. And the guys they've replaced them with are Mitch Kenny, Scott Sorensen, and I think Taylan May will start for Crichton. And Kenny, Sorensen, and May are all good players, but I wouldn't call them skillful. They're all meat axes, man. They're all there to like run into shit and break shit. So I think what's going to be different about Penrith this year is they're losing a little bit of that flash. They're losing a little bit of that spark and that creativity. And we've seen how important that is for them, but they're going to compensate by playing to their ultimate strength, which is like, you know, strength and toughness and blunt force trauma. And like they're the blunt force artists at this point. And that means their margin for error is going to be a bit narrower and the path to victory each week is probably going to be more arduous. But they're so well versed in going through that process every week. You know, they're so good at this. They're so experienced in the fight now that, of course, they're still going to be really dangerous.
I think there's no doubt in my mind or your mind or, like, you know, anyone's mind that's watched this football club over the last three seasons that they can come into this campaign and be a force again. I don't think that anyone should or even at this point possibly could be writing them off with what we've seen. Like, you mentioned those guys they lost. I think Coruscant is probably the biggest of the three. And you're completely right. Mitch Kenny's a completely different player. But to lose a guy of his quality and still come out on top is just, I think, a testament to everything they're doing right. And I feel like that we've said this a million times, but as long as they keep a couple of those guys, as long as Cleary, Yo, Fish, Dylan Edwards, and maybe Brian Toto are there, I feel like the rest of it's just moving parts. And that's not to be disrespectful. I think they've got some fantastic players and they've lost some fantastic players as well. But as long as you keep those core guys, I really don't think that there's any reason to expect them to slow down anytime soon, Ben. So with that in mind, how many weeks into the season are we going to hear the first attempt to try and convince us that nobody believes in them?
Oh, it'll be before the ball club challenge, because what happened last year?
Yeah, well, you just have to run dead against Wigan. Everyone will say it's over, and then it's Penrith versus the world again.
Did they tank the World Cup challenge last year just to get an extra chip on their shoulder for the NRL season?
We're just asking questions.
Just asking questions.
You can blame the throwback kit.
The thing is, most of their throwback kits are so nice, and I really like how in each of the grand finals they've worn different throwback jerseys. Yeah, but the one in the World Cup was, mate, the World Club challenge. No, it wasn't happening. Didn't like it. Didn't rate it. Don't want to know about it. Has this run now been going on long enough that they could wear a 2021 throwback in the 2024 World Club Challenge?
Yeah, they wouldn't throw back to 2020, would they? I don't see why not. But what defines a throwback?
Well, they're gonna have club legend Matt Burton paraded in front of the fans before this year's grand final. It's been that long. The dynasty's gone for so long.
I can't wait for the 22 throwback with Charlie Staines presenting it.
Well, I mean, but some of what's old is new again, Ben, because some of those guys you've lost, you set them free, and because they love you, they've come back. So you're getting a guy in Dane Laurie back. And at this point, but again, you mentioned Jack Cogger there, that he was supposed to just be a depth guy. How excited are you to have a guy like that back? Because I was kind of surprised that West let him go without too much resistance, because he was a guy that when he was on the field for them, I thought was probably their most creative player. And a guy that we've seen only bursts of and only glimpses of, but a guy that we've seen insane levels of skill and talent from. So how excited are you to get him back?
I wouldn't say I was shocked that they let him go. I don't think there was really much of a plan. I don't think they ever really figured out what position worked best for him in that team. And obviously they had grander designs anyway, obviously with the benefit of hindsight. But I mean, now that we know that Luai is going, it effectively becomes a year-long trial run with not only him, but I'm sure we'll mention him as well later on, but Brad Schneider as well, coming in from the Super League via Canberra. So, yeah, Laurie was a guy that we liked coming through. One of those kids that were banging the door down for his the fan base was banging the door down for his debut when it actually happened. Got a token debut, I think, on the wing in like one of those round whatever games at the end of the season once the team was up by 1,000 points in the ladder. To see him go and to see those early Tigers days, not necessarily one that got away just because the team was so dominant at the time, but to have him back, his versatility, to be able to spell both fullback and 5/8, wherever I assume he'll probably slot in more as a half, considering the guys ahead of him, not only in first grade, but some of the backs they've got in reserve grade at this point that they'll want to take a look at. And the fact that I think the path to first grade for him in this Penrith team is in the halves. So yeah, very excited to see. He probably won't play much this year. They might stick him on the bench in kind of that Sonny Luke style role. Not that that was really that useful to them. They didn't really use it that much. But yeah, I mean, it's only up from here. And then, yeah, if he impresses this, he's only signed for 1 year, but looking forward, it could be a very rich payday down the line.
It's funny that you said that he was a guy that Penrith fans wanted to get in the team, you know, because like Penrith fans now are militant about Dylan Edwards. Like they would storm the Capitol January 6th style if Dylan Edwards told them to. But there was a time where you all weren't convinced. I want everyone to remember that. There was a time when even Penrith fans were like, I don't know about this Dylan Edwards character. Don't forget where you came from, fellas. But I'm with you, Ben. I'm a tremendous fan of Dane Laurie. I thought in two really bad Tigers teams, he was in the 3 years he was there, they were really bad the whole time. And I always thought he was a shining light. He got player of the year his first 2 years there, which again, it's a bad team, but still someone's got to be the best. And he pretty clearly was. I wasn't surprised to see him go back to Penrith because it's clear he always still had a really strong affinity with the club. Like you guys will remember after that first
gave it away.
And he was out wearing the jersey from his debut and mixing it up and all that. And he's not from Penrith. He's from Grafton, I think. He's from somewhere on the North Coast. But I think like he feels like Penrith, the area, is sort of his home. So he was someone I was really keen for the Raiders to look at because I think he is really talented. And I think you're right, Ben. I think for him and Schneider, who I'm also a fan of, and maybe, you know, Jack Kohler or a couple of other guys they've got in reserve grade, this whole season is a little bit of a season-long trial to see who's going to replace Luai. And, you know, I know it's still very early, but I reckon Laurie is probably going to end up doing it. I like getting Schneider just because it's good to have guys who you know can step in and be capable. I was surprised to see Canberra let him go to the Super League last year because I felt like he'd done pretty well in the limited time he had been in first grade. And then he went to England and he was with Hull KR and he had a bit more responsibility and he played some super football, like kicked a long-range field goal in the semi-final in Golden Point in the Challenge Cup semi-final to get Hull KR to Wembley. I think they made the second or third week of the finals. They really, really overperformed. He played some great footy over there. And it was probably the right time for him to sort of take that step up from reserve grade because I think he's sort of at that point where the only way he could get better was getting more footy in regularly. And given that he's a pretty big fella and he can defend really well, it wouldn't surprise me if he sort of gets that 14 spot and he sort of does that Jack Cogger thing where he covers hooker for a little bit and then goes into the halves if someone goes down. But it's a nice problem to have. Like, that's what, like, honestly, that really pissed me off about Penrith last year is they made three signings and all three of them was like, fuck, that's really good. Like, I like all three of those guys, particularly Paul Alamotti, who we'll get to in a minute. But like the fact that nobody else thought to get Laurie or Schneider or Alamotti, I was like, they're already great. Why is everyone making it easier for them?
Yeah.
Like you don't have, they already take everything off you. You don't have to give them more, you know?
I'm glad you mentioned him, and we were always going to talk about it. But Ben, so I've had a few mates who support the Bulldogs who are all 100% certain that Paul Alamotti, if and when he gets his opportunity in first grade for Penrith, is going to look like a star. What's your interpretation of that?
I don't really know. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say I watched a ton of Dogs last year because, quite frankly, I don't hate myself that much.
That's self-care. That's good.
Yeah. But from my understanding, he was in the team early in the season. As he was 18, and obviously an 18-year-old thrust into first grade, there's going to be some rough edges, and maybe his defense was, for a lack of a better word, turnstile-ish. But I know there was the few Canterbury fans that I saw talking about him, like, it was kind of on one hand, the potential, like, you never know, but there was some weird rumors about demands about money and playing time and agents, and I don't really know. But look, he's not going to, I don't think he's going to be the first choice at the start of the year, despite, I guess, what everyone thought when the signing was announced. I think Taylor May just kind of got thrown on the back burner because everyone forgot about him because he's been injured for over a That's year true. Now. He got injured at the end of 22 and then re-injured himself in the World Club Challenge, I think. So he's going to get first crack. And apparently all he's been doing is lifting weights. So we'll see how that goes and how big he is and whether he suits the center role, assuming Sunia Taruva stays on the wing, which I think he did more than enough to earn that spot. Mm. I have reserved expectations about Alamotti. I need to see it first, and there's no better place for him to start than in our reserve grade side. He's going to have NRL level talent around him, even at that level, just with the depth that Penrith have in the backs. He's going to have guys like Jesse McLean, Isaiah Yongi, Jack Cole all around him. They'll help him get into that, the system, the Heat culture. But I'm sure once he gets into that side, he's going to look better. He's going to have Cleary and Luai feeding off him. He's going to have a really good winger outside him. So yeah, but just wait and see, I guess.
Yeah, I can't wait for the first mention of, oh, it's like having a new signing as soon as Taylor May does something cool in round one. It's going to be fantastic. And it's definitely going to get said because he's a guy that they definitely has kind of been forgotten about and a guy that was really, really good for them in 2022 when he got his chance.
Yeah, and you're right, Benny. He has been doing nothing but reading the Bible and lifting weights.
He looks like huge.
Since he did his knee. He looks absolutely enormous. I did a story with Terrell May during the finals last year, and the interview sort of finished up and we were just chatting. I said, how's Taylor going? And he goes, mate, he's benching more than me. So he's benching more than the front rowers. So it's got to be going pretty good. Like, Benny, do you reckon he's going? Because Tango showed an ability to play both sides of the field last year. I always like him a lot more on the left, but most of Taylor May's footy has also been on the left side. So I reckon Tago left, May right. What are you thinking?
I think so, because I don't think there's much difference in left wing and right center from a passing perspective, the way you're passing most of the time. I think at least that, and I don't know how much passing is going to do, let's be real, but I think that part of it, I don't think they'd want to shift the Tango and Taruva left side. That side was pretty electric last year. So I think, look, they moved Brian To'o. I don't see why they wouldn't move Taylor May.
I tell you, man, May and To'o on an edge, that's a lot of power. Maybe not a lot of finesse, but I don't think you need finesse when you can just like break everything you run into.
When you got a couple of hammers, everything's a nail. So
that's right. That's right. Yeah. Alamotti is a funny one because not only was he such an acclaimed junior coming through at the Bulldogs, I think when he was playing, he played like two or three years of Jersey Flag. He was playing there when he was 17. He was real young. And that was around the time I was still at the Telegraph and I was doing a lot of lower grade stuff. It was in an area we were sort of looking to cover a lot more at the time. And Alamotti obviously was the sort of the new hotness or whatever. And I remember ringing people I knew at Canterbury and I said, what's this Alamotti like? And, you know, they go on about, you know, he's big and he's strong and he's fast and all that. But to a man, everyone said he had a really great attitude as well. That like he'd get there early, he'd stay late, he'd do extra sessions with the guys who were struggling with their fitness or were trying to drop weight or something. Like he was a real leader for him in that sense. So that's why I was kind of surprised to see it go so badly so quickly at Canterbury because he had probably had some struggles on the field, but he's also like just a kid. He turned 19 a couple of weeks before the season started. He's still just 20 now. So cutting bait on that is something I don't really understand. But again, it's a great move on Penrith's part because you've got this guy who's clearly got something, you know, maybe he's not going to be the absolute stud that everyone thought he was going to be. It's clear there's something there. And then you go to Penrith and you start working on the war rig. And if there's a good player in you, Penrith will find it, you know? So I don't know. Like, I think there's a bit of chat that he might play second row a little bit as well. So maybe that's something they'll explore. I don't know. But yeah, I'm expecting Alamotti to be a pretty big success there. Maybe not starting the season in first grade, but I definitely think he finishes there.
It's something that you touched on earlier, but when you're a club that's as successful as Penrith and there's constant salary cap pressure because you've elevated all these guys to a level where everyone wants to pay them a lot of money to play rugby league, these are the kind of signings that just keep things ticking over. These are any of these guys, like some of them might not work out. Like maybe Alamotti never kicks on, or maybe Schneider doesn't, or maybe Dane Laurie sort of never gets out of reserve grade, but odds are at least one of them will probably be a positive contributor to Penrith, not just this year, but in the years to come. And as long as they can keep taken some swings on these guys who, you know, in Schneider's case, had to go to England for weird reasons. Dane Laurie, the prodigal son, or a young guy like Alamotti, who's, as you said, just kind of unexpectedly fallen out with the club that's brought him up through the grades. It's a wide spectrum of guys that they're throwing darts at. And as long as a couple of them hit, Ben, I feel like there's no reason to expect anything but more success for Penrith going forward.
Yeah, these are the signings that not only do they keep the lower end of the squad ticking over and the team still above water during the Origin period, which was the struggle the first year or two that they started having, well, the first year, really, they started having this success, but also the track record that they've shown with these, I guess, bargain bin one-year swings, guys like Sean O'Sullivan, Jack Cogger, Zach Hosking. I'm sure there's others that I've forgotten, but those sorts of track record that they've built now means guys like Paul Alamotti and Dane Laurie and Brad Schneider are willing to take these one-year gambles in the hope and the assumption that they can also get the Penrith glow up and they can, realistically, there's going to be at least, if Brad Schneider plays like three first grade games this year during Origin period and the subsequent weeks, some clubs throwing 500K at him.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah, Canberra will. Yeah. Canberra will offer $850,000 a year for a guy they could have got for $200,000 a year 2 years ago. It's just money ball, guys. It's just how it works.
That is how it works.
That's how the game is played. But you're right, Benny. Like,
he gets on base.
He does. And it's fucking welcome to flavor country out at Penrith, man. Like, why wouldn't you go there, test yourself in the best environment, play a couple of games in a great team, then waltz off somewhere and clean up? It's funny. We're a good 20 minutes into this chat now. We've barely mentioned any of the established
guns,
players,
yeah.
Like, and you know, they're all sort of finished products at this point. You know, like, what is there more to say about Nathan Cleary or Dylan Edwards or Fish or Liotta or Yo or any of them? But is there anyone who's a bit more established in the team, Ben, that you think, or that you can expect a little bit more from? Is there anyone who you don't think has quite hit peak capacity? No is an acceptable answer after three straight comps.
I was thinking about a way to go with this until you said somebody who hasn't hit where they should be. And I was going to say someone like Liotta maybe hasn't still quite got the recognition he deserves just because of his front row partner, but he's definitely made the most of his abilities. And so I can't really say that. I do wonder, and I think he still had a great year last year. And I know he gets this weird reputation around when he makes rep sides, but Liam Martin is someone that I think he is a fantastic player and I think he's done really well, but he has these occasional streaks where he does go a little bit off, a little bit haywire. Was it the game against Souths where he dropped 1,000 balls and then scored the winner?
And then scored the winner.
Yeah.
So even that, even Penrith's lows end with last second game winners.
But that's
I have no
point,
sympathy
right?
for you, Ben.
Oh, that's all right. I had no sympathy for Liam Martin scoring the winner for 1,000 drops. No, but that's kind of what I'm saying. He still does have a little bit of this rocks and diamonds in him, and it has gradually gone away over the last couple of years. And I think he does hit a really nice hole. He runs really hard, but there's still a part of me that thinks maybe there's a little bit more there. Maybe he can expand his offloading game, just little things like that. But at this point, that we're really nitpicking whoever I bring up at this point.
Yeah. I thought his form in the back end of last year was absolutely fantastic. Yeah, and I feel like maybe that's the only thing is we've not seen him. Yeah, because remember, even going into last year's Origin, it was kind of people being like, oh, he's only in this team because he plays Penrith and stuff. I thought he was playing okay in the first half of the year, but I feel like in those last couple of months of the season, he was lights out. Yeah. So maybe that's Liam Martin being able to play at an elite level for 27 rounds really nitpicking, but
he was fine up until Origin. I think Origin really springboarded him. I thought he was great in Origin, and then they just kind of went
from
there.
He was awesome. Yeah, it'd be nice if your players used Origin as a springboard to improve rather than regress, but
that's what winners do, baby.
Yeah, it's not for everyone. Yeah, we've not talked about Nathan Cleary at all. I don't really know what else there is to say about him. I feel like some of us were already all in on Cleary. Some of us already thought that he was the best halfback in the game. But after last year's grand final, there was no more arguing about that. That nonsense conjecture about him being a system player, being overrated, all finally dissolved into the wind that fateful night in October last year. But I mean, Ben, what more could you ask from? I'll throw the doors open for any of those core guys that I mentioned at the start. Those like big four or five guys that basically are really the only ones that you can't kind of replace with somebody else. So Edwards, Cleary, Fish, Isaiah Yeo and Brian Toto. What more could you ask of those men?
Oh, well, Cleary's girlfriend seems nice.
That's true.
I had to get that in there at some
point. They're a good looking couple.
Can we blame Nathan Cleary if the Matildas don't win the Olympics?
Well, that messy bloke will, so I'm sure.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so I mean, there's really nothing. What else can you say?
Well, like going back to the question I asked Ben, I actually think Mitch Kenny could be someone that we see a bit of improvement from.
I did want to bring him up before, but
yeah, I know a grand final try scorer, Mitch Kenny, which is still
first try scorer. The tickets are still paying off,
bro. I reckon me and Pup, I reckon between us, we were on maybe 30 of the 34 players in one form or another. I guess which one we weren't on, fucking Mitch Kenny. But love Mitch Kenny's defense. He really made that a trademark of his play over the last two seasons. It sort of got him back in the side in 22, and he played a big role in winning that grand final against Para. But I think there's still levels he can go to with his attack, and he's never going to be a sort of, you know, knifing through the center of the ruck, Damien Cook, 30-meter run type player. But I think there's little things that he can sort of improve on, a little bit of that Api Korosau stuff where you're manipulating markers and manipulating space and just changing the way you bring blokes onto the ball. And one of those little things that I think kind of got lost a little bit in the grand final discourse is the Nathan Cleary try. Kenny plays a really big role in setting that up, but it's a really sort of subtle thing. He looks like he's going open. Jordan Rickey's at marker. He starts chasing, and then Kenny just shifts his weight, comes back to the blind, and Rickey overcorrects in his chase. And that's why the hole's so big, you know? So it's only tiny little things like that, and they're very, very subtle, and they're hard to see unless you're looking for them. But if Kenny can just add a little bit of that to his game, then the best forward pack in the comp could potentially get a little bit better, which is disheartening.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because that is what I was going to say earlier. So Kenny became a starter, if you remember, at the back end of 22 for defensive reasons, just to take the heat out, and then they bring Karasu on, and then he wouldn't really play much. He might come back on for a spell to play as a middle forward kind of thing to give Yeo a bit of a break. But when he became the full-time starter at the start of last season after Karasu left, that's when there were questions about, I guess, the futility at times of Penrith's attack, because they'd lost such guile through the middle. And a lot of that was pointed at Mitch Kenny and the limitations in him. And then everyone started calling for Sonny Luke or Luke Summerton, who's a reserve grade hooker. And I think part of that was just, especially with Sonny Luke, because he was closer in play style, if maybe not level or effectiveness to Korosau, that everyone thought, well, they just need Sonny Luke to play more, and then everything will magically become better. And as the season went on, Kenny, I think, got a lot better, especially in the back half of the year. I thought his service was really good. There weren't many passes that were like at the head or at the feet. He's never going to be that manipulative presence. He's not going to move markers regularly. I know what he did in that grand final was probably a once every season kind of thing for him, but I do think his level improved to the point where he wasn't the walking liability that many people thought he was going to be at the start of the year, to the point where he was a critical part of that spine.
Yeah, completely agree. There's no part of me that watched those Penrith games late in the season and thought that Mitch Kenny was, you know, the weak link or a detrimental character. In fact, I remember that there was that game halfway through the year where Luke Summerton kind of had a pretty rough few minutes when he was out there on his debut. And it actually kind of made me think, geez, you know, they're missing Mitch Kenny out there. Which is a bizarre thing to like, what? How did we get to this point? That this is like a guy that Penrith fans were like memeing on Twitter 18 months ago. To me being like, "Jeez, if they just had me,
gotta get
Kenny
back out there." That's funny, man. Like every now and then, like you'll say a sentence to yourself and you'll just realize, God, like what's my life become? It happened to me the other day. I was working on a story, and I said out loud, "Damn, I'm going to need a spreadsheet for this one."
Oh, bro. Nicholas Campton.
The computer. That's the second program you have to open.
So washed. I'm so washed. It's over, dude.
Yeah. So prediction wise, I've got them finishing first on the ladder. What are we doing here? Look, I have officially put my flag in this island. I am not gonna be a year early on Penrith's demise. I am not gonna bet against them. I'm gonna pick Penrith every year until they regress. I'm not gonna try and be the trendy guy that jumps in front of that ship a year early as we've all been caught doing with the Melbourne Storm in past years. I'm not going to do that. It's the Penrith Panthers. They're the best rugby league team I have ever seen. Yes, they've lost a couple of guys, a couple of really good football players, but no one who I would say is even in their top six or seven players. They've got all those core guys back again. As long as they stay relatively injury free, they'll sleepwalk into the top four. And then at that point, you know, it's up to somebody else to find a way to beat them when it really matters. But
have you got them first, or is that on the ladder, or winning the comp as well?
I was going to save our grand final prediction for the end of the previews, Nicholas. Okay. But first on the ladder, yes. Mm. What about you?
All right, you think they're better than the 50s Dragons?
Oh my God, mate, I will say, like, I just want to make this point really quickly, because this does come up a lot when I say things like, they're the best team I've seen, they're the best team in the NRL history. I just want to make it really clear for people when they bring up, like, people who unironically bring up, like, the Eels in the 80s or the Dragons in the 1950s. No disrespect to any of those clubs, but when you look at what sport is now compared to not just what it was in the 80s, much less what it was in the 50s, when you look at what sport is now compared to where it was then, where every single team is hyper-professionalized, every single player is an elite athlete, every single team is doing everything they can to try and eke every tiny little drop of advantage out of every aspect of a rugby league club that they can, whether it's on the field, off the field, performance, training, tactics, all that stuff. It's a refined science to the nth degree. It's a complete arms race every year to try and find any advantage over your opponents that you can. That's not a thing that existed in the 80s, and it certainly didn't exist in the 1950s. It's a thing that exists now, not to mention the salary cap as well. So to have all of those checks and balances in place, which are entirely designed to have parity in the sport and are designed to avoid situations like we have right now with the Penrith Panthers, for them to have won 3 grand finals in a row and to have appeared in 4 grand finals in a row and to be odds on to win the premiership again, as I open the betting odds right now, to do that in an era where basically everything is set up to avoid this from happening is unfathomable. And it's the most impressive thing I can remember in any of the sports that I watch.
We're also obsessed with the 80s. Do you think in the 80s they sat around talking about the 40s the way we do with the 80s? Because it's a comparative gap now. You know what I'm saying?
It is. Like, yeah, I'll have to ask him.
So I don't know. Look, I think you made a good point earlier, Bungard, that Penrith still have their core together, right? And as long as they have that core, they're going to be competitive, if not excel. But it sort of follows on from something that I said earlier. I think they've finally been stripped of nearly all their bells and whistles. That, like, for example, Stephen Crichton, right? So a great finisher, very athletic and all that, but I think they relied on his skill a lot in really big spots. And you could see that in the last 20 minutes or so of the grand final. You know, it wasn't just how he was running with the ball that was doing stuff. He put in some really important kicks, particularly one where he just, like, picked it up out of dummy half, nothing was on, put it down a short side and trap Reece Walsh and go. Like, little stuff like that is what they're going to miss. And they've been able to paper over those cracks when Appy Coruscant left and when Kikau left. But I think Crichton leaving is sort of the last straw. I don't think they're going to have that sort of skill aspect to their play. It's like I said before, they're still going to be, like, mean as meat axes. They're still going to be bloodthirsty. They are still going to try and, like, break every team they play in two. And I think they're going to be able to do that to nearly everyone. But I'm also expecting I'm expecting a couple of teams who were good last year to be good again. I'm expecting another couple of teams to improve, because I think the underrated, or not the underrated thing, but one of the stranger things about Penrith's run is that they haven't had an arch rival that entire time. Normally, when there's a team like this that's so dominant, there's a team who is at least close enough to really push them. So you think about, the Storm and the Roosters before this Penrith run, or the Storm and Manly, or the Bulldogs and the Roosters in the early 2000s, or the Broncos and the Raiders in the early 90s, whatever. And Penrith just haven't really had that. They haven't had a team that's been consistently nipping at their heels the whole time. But I think they're going to get that now. I think there's going to be more teams capable of winning the premiership this year than there was last year. And I think while Penrith is still really going to be good, I've got them finishing third. I think the run's over.
Wow. Benjamin?
The run of what, 1 year of finishing first? Because they haven't won the premiership every year, the minor, I don't think.
Well, no, I mean the run of winning the premiership. Like,
oh, wow.
That's
That was a little tough to hear.
Yeah. So, Ben?
I have given the ladder no thought, so I'll just say first.
Good, man. I respect
thinking's
that so
for
much.
Losers. So on these preseason shows, when we're talking to fans of other teams who know more about the teams than we do, we always like to try and pick a young player that's really going to make an impact. The difficult part for Ben will be choosing one of Penrith's hundreds of good young players, but Benny, who is a young dude who we might not have seen a lot of, who you're expecting to have a bit of an impact this season?
Yeah, so there's this 14-year-old at Patrician Brothers in black.
there's this 10-year-old in orange who's doing really well. Like,
yeah, he's Isaiah Yeo the third. No, so we touched on it briefly before, just about how we think Taylor May is going to claim the open center spot, but I do think there is still going to be a little bit of competition for that. And two guys that I think are in that mix, one more than the other, but Jesse McLean, who debuted last year, he only played a game, but he's a guy that I think the Brass have pretty good wraps on to maybe come in and play a little bit more first grade this year. He's a really big, powerful runner. Played, I think, on the wing in his debut, but I think he's more of a center in the reserve grade. And the other guy who probably is a bit further off, and I don't really know what position he could compete for, but he's a Queensland rep in underage, is Isaiah Yonge. I know Campo has spoken about him a couple of times on this show as well as an underage kid to look out for.
It sounds suspect.
I phrased it very deliberately.
Yeah, like you're not doing me any favors there then.
I mean, you said you were covering low grade for Telegraph. This is on you.
That's true. It is.
Why? Because I did my job. I don't like this.
The AFP have been contacted.
Oh, tough break for my boy.
Rough starts the season.
I do also want to say, we didn't speak about, I don't want to drag this too long, but Len Yu leaving, that leaves a pretty important role to fill as well. And I'm interested to see who comes onto the bench to replace him. It'll probably be Liam Henry. He's kind of been groomed. I don't like that word either, but it's the only one I can think of.
What are we, boys?
Ben, what is doing, man?
For that spot.
You've been in Van Diemen's Land too long, bro. You're going crazy. I'm glad you bring up Henry, because Henry was going to be my pick. It was difficult for me for a while to discern between the many, many country boys that Penrith brought down to play in the forwards, because they were all big, they were all raw boned. They all had names like Liam Henry or Lindsay Smith or whatever. For a while, I was convinced they were the same person. But last year, Henry got a couple of games in. I really liked his aggressiveness. I think he's really raw boned as a runner. And I think Benny, he is capable of sort of filling that Spencer Lenu role off the bench, where he's just coming on, smashing shit up in short stints. You know, he runs like he wants to hurt people, which is what I want out of my bench forwards. Probably not as powerful as Lenu, but few men are. But yeah, I'm a Liam Henry fan.
Yeah, I wouldn't put explosiveness in his traits, but compared to Lindsay Smith, maybe he is. I don't know.
All right, that's fair. Okay, so Camp and I have discussed at length who will be the team of the podcast in 2024. Every year we pick an extra team that's not the Rabbitohs or the Raiders to hitch our flag to. It's usually the West Tigers. We've constantly told each other and pleaded to all of you, the listeners, to not let us pick the West Tigers again in 2024. Just say no. So I've taken some steps to eliminate all the risk of that happening, and that will be through the power of random chance. If you aren't aware, I'll be going to Las Vegas to cover the games for ESPN and do some daily podcasts while I'm over there. Las Vegas is with casinos. Casinos are filled with roulette wheels. Roulette wheels have 38 numbers on them in America. So I thought the fairest thing to do was to have the 15 teams that are not Canberra or Souths, everyone, including the Broncos, including the Roosters. There's 38 numbers, so it's not entirely divisible by three. So the bottom eight teams will get to pick three numbers on the roulette wheel, and the top brass only get two. So, Ben, you can pick two spots on the roulette wheel. You're the first guest, so it's wide open. Any number between 0, 00, or 1 to 36. You can pick two numbers.
You know what's going to happen, right?
What?
It's going to land on whatever Simon picks.
I mean,
and you're going to have the West Tigers as the team of the pod for the fourth year in a row.
Yeah, but if it's random chance, we have alleviated all guilt from that. That's not our fault. The wheel.
Yeah, that's the gods deciding.
Exactly. So,
and they haven't been to the team of the show ever. Remember when Bungard tried to make his Sharks the team of the show?
They were in 2022.
Oh, no, I didn't like that. No.
Yeah, no one likes that.
Well, I can't rig this. So
every time you try and rally the people of Cronulla, it doesn't end well.
Shut up. Oh, Jesus. Goodness me. Pick two numbers, you piece of shit.
23 will be the first one. And six.
23 and six go to Penrith. All right. Well, we will rapidly fill that up in the next few weeks, and then I'll go down and do one spin.
Imagine if Penrith are the team of the show.
I'd be happier with that than if it's the Roosters or the Bulldog.
Oh, I don't know, man. It's like cheering for the Lannisters, you know? Like,
Oh, I mean, you know.
What's wrong with them?
Yeah.
As a Tasmanian, I relate to a lot of the
fans. You're on fire.
We've got to get Benny out of here, man. This is a family show.
Too hot to get it. The cover photo for this podcast is going to be Ben with the caution tape over his mouth. He just says what everyone's thinking.
Ben Quagliata, unrated cut.
Exactly. All right, Ben, where can people find your work?
Footy related, beyond the goalpost, anything more general, beyond the fence. It's all there.
All right. Thank you so much, Benny. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, bud.
Thank you.
And with Penrith in the books, we will now jump to a team who I think it's fair to say have slightly lower aspirations than winning their fourth premiership in a row. But a team that, you know, was, you know, they had their time. They had their time. They were once the Penrith of National Rugby, the team everyone hated, the team everyone was chasing. And that is, of course, the Manly Warringah Seagulls. And joining us today, Joe Barton, welcome.
What are we now? If we're no longer
Manly, hated. Manly are definitely a team who are in the NRL.
Yep. You're going to hate this, Joey, as a proud Philadelphia Eagles man, but you're kind of like the Dallas Cowboys now. We're like, you were really good in the 90s, and the hate hasn't exactly, like, people still hate the Dallas Cowboys, but they're kind of just not that good anymore. And that's kind of Manly. Yeah.
When I was in Dallas last year, and I could see Cowboys Stadium in the distance, and I was struck by the thought that, yeah, wow, it looks a lot like Brookvale.
They're very similar. Very similar
place. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, like, yeah. Real, like, couldn't tell them apart.
No.
Yeah. So we're having a laugh about Manly. But the Dragons and the Seagulls had a scrimmage the other day. So it's a little bit more than an opposed training session, a little bit less than a trial. And Dragons coach Shane Flanagan came out and said that Manly can win the comp. Bardo, are you buying your grand final tickets now, or are you just going to cut out the middleman and go camp out the front of ANZ Stadium for several months?
So I'm definitely not what you'd call the biggest Siebes fan, but I think I'll take his quote after that more seriously than I'll take Shane Flanagan's quote, because his quote was like, oh, you know, I think he's maybe he's pulling your leg or something like that. And I think that's probably closer to the mark than Manly Seagulls premiership favourites, or however Shane Flanagan. Maybe it's just, you know, he was with the Seagulls last year and he just wanted to pump our tyres up a little bit. Or maybe Turbo scored two tries and he just wanted to let his boys down easy on. Fellas, we were beaten by the best, and there's no shame in that.
did Aaron Woods play a half for both teams in that scrimmage as a club legend of both teams?
I don't know what Aaron Woods is doing, to be perfectly honest with you, mate. He played far more football than I wanted him to last year. And the most devastating part of it was probably Manly's third best forward by the end of the comp. So that's never going to be a good sign. If you're looking at him and going, yeah, behind Paseka and, you know, whatever is left of Josh Alloway. Oh, and he was better than Josh Alloway last year, so that's disappointing. But if he's your third best middle, then you have problems. And I think Manly probably have some problems.
Yeah, Bardo, your voice is deep and soothing, but it's clear that you cannot soothe the many problems with this Manly roster. But the reason I brought up that Dragon stuff and the Flanagan quote or whatever is because I feel like there is, in a lot of the mainstream footy media, there is sort of this expectation that, oh, Manly's got, if everything goes right, it can be a top four squad. And I cannot understand it for the life of me.
I've read it a few times. Like,
yeah, I don't know. What are we doing? What are we talking about here?
Prominent journalists who I think, you know, Siebes has befriended or something like that have exactly as you said, tipped Manly to be a potential top four bolter. I'm as, you know, deep in the mud when it comes to Manly as you can possibly be. And I think everything would have to be very, very special and line up absolutely perfectly. Like, you'd need a season. And, you know, that's not impossible. I mean, if there is a season where Turbo, who even when he was fit last year, didn't look particularly great, but if he comes out and is injury-free and plays 20-plus games and Brooks plays 20-plus games and Schuster plays 20-plus games and Cherry plays every game and doesn't look 35, then if all those things happen and somehow the forwards find a bit of an edge outside of Hamale, who was terrific last year, bar, you know, a 6 or 10 week period in the middle of the year where he kind of just went off the boil.
Barring the 2 months where he was off the boil, it was a great year.
I love that. What an incredible
strong. If he can play the way that he did for the start and the finish,
Yeah.
Yes, maybe Manly can finish top four. But I think, you know, half of those guys have big injury concerns, and you're investing a lot of your attack into Brooks, Turbo, Schuster. You know, they haven't played a lot of footy. They haven't managed to stay on the park much in the past couple of years.
Yeah, I think that's why people go, best case scenario, they're a top four team. I think a lot of that reasoning comes down to the fact that the only season in the last five or six where he was fully fit for the entire year, they were a top four team and he won the Daly M and everything looked great. That doesn't, of course, factor in any of the sort of bells and whistles that went along with 2021 and why it was such a different season to the ones we've seen before and against it, and how Manly's roster specifically was suited really well to the rules that are not really the same rules that we have now back again in 2024. And it doesn't really factor in anything beyond the fact that Tom Tavojevic was really good. Is it as simple as that, though, Joey? Like, is it as simple as if Tom Tavojevic stays fit, this is a top eight team? I'm not going to say top four, but is this a top eight team if Tom Tavojevic plays a full season?
If Tom Tavojevic plays a full season, I'll be very impressed. But beyond that, I mean, if he plays 20-plus games, I would expect Manly. I mean, Manly was 3 points off the eight last year, and Turbo played, I don't know, would have been no more than 12 games. So they really weren't that far off last year. I don't think, as a roster, I don't think they're any worse than they were last year. My issues with the way the roster is being constructed at the moment is more about kind of sacrificing the future to bring in a lot of reserve graders, which in a way like strengthens the first grade team this year, because if you've got, you know, guys like Tommy Talau who can possibly be a first grader, if not like a top tier guy ever in his life, he won't be that, but he could play first grade this year. Maybe some of the guys that they've let go weren't going to play first grade this year. So I don't think the team is going to be worse than they were last year, and they really weren't that far off the final last year. So if Turbo plays 20 games, if Turbo plays 18 games, they should definitely be around that top eight mark, around, you know, 6 to 8. I kind of think 6 is their peak. That is their, like, zenith.
I'm with you totally.
Yeah, the struggle,
I can't see the top four thing no matter what.
Yeah, the struggle with Trbojevic, everyone knows about the injury problems, but they've kind of been going on for so long now that I think we forget to sort of zoom out and see it as a whole. He hasn't played over 20 games in a season since 2018, even in 2021 when he had that great year, he didn't play 20 games. Even though I know shortened season and all that. For me, it's not so much the injuries, it's the variety of injuries. It's not just hamstrings anymore. It's last year it was a pec injury, the year before it was a shoulder injury, and he's had multiple serious injuries on those parts of his body now. Like, he's been wiped out with pecs twice. He's been wiped out with shoulders twice. We all know about his hamstrings. And it just makes it a hard thing to rely on, you know? And even when he did play last year, I agree with you, Joey. I thought he was pretty good without sort of getting towards top gear, which is, you know, what you expect after a guy's coming back from a serious shoulder problem. But even when he played last year for Manly, he played 11 games, they were 6-4-1. So they were better, but it's not like they were absolutely supercharged, you know? So I don't wish injury on anyone or anything like that, but
we can't assume health with him now.
Yeah, it's just difficult.
It's been five or six years of this.
Exactly. It's just difficult for me to expect that he's going to be able to get through it just because he's just had so much, like, he's just sort of copped so many shots with it, you know? And you might say, well, you know, it's bad luck and luck has to turn, but maybe it's just the way his body is. Like, maybe it's just some physiology thing that you can't ever get away from, you know?
Some guys are just less durable than other guys. That's just a reality of life. Like, and obviously luck is a part of that. You're born the way you're born, but like, and he happened to be born as one of the most freakishly talented athletes ever, who also kind of happens to be made of glass a little bit. And that's kind of cruel in a way, but that's, you're right, mate. That's the reality that we're at the moment. We can't just go, oh, well, if he's fully fit and everything goes well, then they could make the top four. Because like at this point you're betting, but even sports bet, I don't think would be as macabre to have a market on this. But if you're having a market on like Tom Tavojevic over 20.5 games or something this year, I feel like the under would be the short price favorite, Joey.
Yeah, and it's honestly not just Turbo. It's that entire left edge, basically, like him, Brooks, and Schuster. If Schuster is the starting left back row, which he may or may not be, Ben Turbo might have overtaken him there. But if those three guys, I don't think any of them would be paying better than, you know, even money for to be playing 20 plus games. Like, they've all had injury. Like, Brooks has had hamstring injuries. Schuster's had everything injuries. He's had bloody chicken pox in the past couple of weeks. So, like,
yeah,
he's even less durable than Turbo after 10 seasons of first grade. Like, and they are three guys who are absolutely crucial. Like, obviously, you've got Cherry on the right edge, pretty reliable, hasn't missed a lot of footy, is getting older, turns 35 in like 3 weeks. You know, that's a lot of investment in your attack in guys who are not durable and you cannot rely on all that sort of thing. And beyond that, it comes down to coaching and being able to slot other guys in. And I'm not convinced that Siebes has been that guy, been able to make up game plans to be without those guys at various points. And
That's one of my biggest concerns with the way this Manly team's put together this year is we just had Ben on before to talk about the Panthers, Joe, and we talked about how because of Penrith's salary cap situation, how good they are and how they're always losing good players, that they've got to make signings with a wide net, but guys that have a really high upside, they might not all work out, but some of them, if they do work out, could be transformative signs, like a guy like Brad Schneider or a guy like Dane Laurie or Paul Alamotti that's on for this year. If one of those guys works out, the best case scenario is really good. I look at the guys who Manly have signed, and there's not a lot of guys where I can see like there's some solid players, and I think Luke Brooks is still a solid player. I think Bailey Hodgson, when he's been on the field, has been a solid player, but I don't look at Jackson Barlow or Tommy Tillet or Brandon Wakeham and think, or even my boy Corey Waddell, shout out the Waddlers. I don't look at any of those guys and think that, like, if they have their best season, that they could elevate this Manly team to being a level above what they are right now. I just can't see, like, I could see them being solid pieces for them. Good depth, sure, absolutely. But none of those guys are really striking me as a guy that could be a transformative signing for Manly if everything breaks right for them. What do you think?
No, literally the only other one who, like, so Brooks, I actually think could be good. Genuinely excited if he stays fit and all that sort of thing. I actually think it could be a pretty good environment for him, like having the chief playmaking duties taken off him and just being told to help with that left edge. But I don't know, injuries is going to be the kind of topic that I'll press on. But aside from Brooks, Jackson Paulo might be the only other guy that I look at and go, I would be happy to have you in first
grade. Remember the Jacksonville Stadium Renaissance at the start of last year?
What a couple of weeks that was. Yeah, it was really something. I share a lot of your concerns, Joe, and I don't think Anthony Seibold has had the best record of getting blokes to the club and getting blokes to a club and really improving them. You know, you don't have to be the Panthers to get someone in and sort of improve them as a player, improve their habits or anything like that. There's a lot of clubs that are able to do that. And I just don't know if Manly have sort of shown that track record over the last 12 months or so, for as long as he's been there. I want to talk to you more about Brooks, because another one of those big media narratives that's out there in the minute is kind of similar to what you just said, that Cherry's going to run the team and Brooks just can be the secondary playmaker and run the ball a lot. I've never actually liked that role for Brooks. The Tigers tried it a couple of times, and to me, it never really worked. They even tried it years ago when Moses was there, and they ran more stuff through Moses. Brooks didn't play well. They tried it when Benji was there. Didn't work again. They tried it when Hastings was there, and it didn't work again. I don't like Brooks as a running 5'8". He's not Ezra Mamm. You know, he's a guy who can run, but to me, his running game sets him up as a distributor. And I like him running in the idea of, I like him going to the line, playing straight, taking on tired forwards with his footwork. I've been a Luke Brooks believer for a really, really long time, but I feel like Manly are going to ask him to do a job that he's not really that suited for. And that might offset the benefits that he is going to get from being in a new environment and getting a fresh start, which is something that I think he really needed. So I don't know. You said you're kind of excited about him.
Yeah.
What's exciting you?
Well, I mean, I'll take what you said there. And like they tried it with the Tigers. When he was at the Tigers, he never had the option of straightening up and then dishing it out the back to Tom Trbojevic.
Remember when he used to do it with Teddy?
And it didn't work?
No, it was really good. It was just Teddy could never stay on the field a lot of the time. But that was really good when they're attacking like through the middle. That was a real strength of theirs, especially like kicks or turning back inside. So I liked like the idea of him and Turbo going up the middle.
Yeah.
I like. But him being wide out on the edge second receiver. I don't like that as much. I like him attacking through the middle more, you know?
Well, hopefully Sleeves is listening to this podcast and changes the game plan up. I mean, I didn't watch the scrimmage. I know Turbo got 2 tries, and I think Brooks might have come on after Turbo went off after 20-odd minutes. But I think he scored off Nathan Brown play through the middle. Nathan Brown could be the secret to Manly's success. Another wonderful. Right,
we touched on grim sentences earlier, Nick. That's another one there. I'll give you another one. Will you feel the loss of Sean Kefi in 2024?
Certainly not. He was, he was not my favorite player.
Yeah,
Bungard, you're about 2 Souths games away from saying, you know, Sean Kefi, underrated. That's gonna be you. So don't be throwing shots now, bro.
Superb front on defender, and if that was all he had to do in a rugby league game, then he'd be one of the
best. Really bad at that, so that's fine. Speaking of guys you've lost though, like the finers, and is there anyone besides that you're like filthy about? Like Morgan Harper kind of had his time at Manly. It never really clicked to the full extent. I think Campbell Tuolangi was a bit of a bust, and you lose KO Weeks down to Canberra as well. Is there anyone finer aside that's sort of, you know, you're mourning for?
No, not at all. I mean, I look at those guys and they were kind of all the... So, I mean, they're basically the same as the guys who come in, to be perfectly honest. Like, reserve grade level, that they're, you know, you're very happy if they're playing for Blacktown. You're not as happy if they're starting in the starting 13 at Brookie. But, I mean, this leads into the, you know, the one question that you pitched at me, you know, in the lead up to this pod, which was think of somebody exciting from Manly who you're pumped about this year, who other people might not have heard of, and I'm like, oh well, could be Latu Fainu. Oh no, he's gone. He's gone. Maybe Samuela Fainu. No, he's gone.
How do you have no Fainus left?
You got a Fainu like, surplus.
There was 10 of them.
There were 4, and to be fair, one's in jail. So the other 3 have gone to the Tigers, which is NRL jail.
You know, losing one Fainu, it's possible. 3 finals, there's an outside chance.
9 finals?
But 9 finals?
No, the loss of the finals is, I mean, it could well be the kind of defining mark of Seibold's Manly career. Like, there's every chance that he's, you know, if Manly goes busted, if Manly finishes 12th again next year, I think there will be a lot of people, certainly a lot of Manly fans, asking whether he deserves to see out his 4 years as coach. If that's his legacy, is kind of selling the farm for selling off these 2 blokes to get a lot of experienced or seasoned first graders, most likely reserve graders, and you lose two talents who potentially could be, you know, like if you believe the hype on Latu, could be, you know, a top 5 tier half or 5/8 or whatever in the competition in 4 or 5 years. He was on Manly's books. Like, they were on contract at Manly. Like, it wasn't like they were off contract.
They've been building the future of the club around those guys for 3 or 4 years now. Yeah. Like, that they were meant to be a real pillar for Manly for a decade or something. Like, who knows if they kick on or whatever, but those guys were the plan. But losing them in one fell swoop, it could be a serious blow.
Yeah, that is your daily chairman's succession plan, walking out the door when Cherry's got, you know, 18 months to go or 2 years to go or however long he's re-signed for.
No, it's a lifetime contract, so he has to play until he dies. That's the rule.
Yeah. Well, he could do the Cliffy Lines and play until he's 40. But
if anyone could,
Zach Barton's going to be a guest on here one day with Bungard Jr. and Nick Campton III, and Cherry's still going to be playing. Like,
he will.
I believe it.
He's going to outlast all of us. The heat death of the universe will occur as Cherry Evans pots over another field goal for Manly. Like, he's never going to stop that dude.
No. And I'm not going to bet against him at this point. He was fantastic last year as well. I feel like I was thinking about that before we did this preview, like, oh, thinking about the things that went well for Manly and can you take them all for granted that they're going to happen again? And I'm like, yeah, I just assume that Dally Evans will keep playing really well because we've had no reason to expect otherwise.
I hope he does. I know Campo's chomping at the bit to mention how Cherry played in the end of season tests for Australia.
Don't try and frame me as some Cherry Evans hater. He won me over eventually. Like,
oh, did he?
Oh yeah, like he just wore me down. He just kept playing good. became a more personable bloke.
What like, a jerk. Playing good footy and being cool.
No, the backflip on the Titans is nearly 10 years ago now. We've all got to move on. I like Jerry, bro.
He
just played bad. That's all right. Everyone plays bad sometimes.
Put him on the back page of the paper in a Blues jersey. What was the headline? You dirty cockroach? Was that
something like that?
Oh my god!
The Gold Coast Bully was wild and back in the day, man.
They really were.
the paper of note.
Yeah, absolutely. But
you mentioned him a little bit, but he's probably the most polarizing player at the club at the minute. Josh Schuster, moving back to the second row, came out during the week that he's kind of barely trained over the summer because he keeps getting hurt or being struck down by maladies. Like, I think he's got the consumption or something. Like,
yeah.
He's definitely cursed.
I'm a big believer in Schuster's talent, but I'm also self-aware enough to recognize that this could be a Folletti Matteo situation where I'm just so enchanted by the possibilities that I'm maybe not seeing the forest for the trees. It's very low stakes for me, Joe. It's very high stakes for you. So how are you feeling about Schuster, where he's at, what he can be, and the move back to the second row?
I don't hate the move back to the second row. The thing that I hate most about Schuster and his role at Manly is that he's being paid far, far too much money for the role that he's now going to be doing. So he's on 850 plus to be an edge back row, which is kind of astronomical money for that role and what he can do in a team. He's basically being paid starting half money, but to play in the back row. I don't hate the back row move. I think he played incredibly well there, kind of as somebody who came through as a 5/8. He then got slotted in because he was a big body and Manly had foreign, and I thought he was really, really good. And he kind of unlocked that left edge time and time again in the one season that he did play exclusively back row. The fear is, his durability is just makes it very, very hard to become emotionally invested in what he might be able to do in that, whether he might be able to repeat that this year. If he can stay fit, he has like all the skills that could unlock that left edge again. And, ball play with Turbo, set Garrick up for 100 tries. That could all be possible. But the physicality in the forwards is definitely a thing. Rugby league forwards hit hard, and he hasn't proven that he can stay on the field for any number of weeks. He's got the calves of a 45-year-old man at the moment. He spent close to 2 months off the field near the start of last year with a calf injury. He's picked up another calf injury in preseason this year, having already broken his finger, having come down with the chicken pox. Like, as long as he's getting all of this stuff out of the way, before he's only...
Yes, famously, that's how injuries 21. Work. Once you get a few of them, they never come back again.
Yeah. I feel like he's only 21 and he's been struck down by as much bad luck as you could possibly imagine.
Fair point. Yeah. I agree with everything you guys are saying.
I'm going, by God.
No, I was going to say, when he's on the field and when he's playing well, like the most obvious comps are guys like Matteo or John Sutton, who were always better as forwards than as being asked to take on a full-time playmaking role. And I did kind of from the start think that whole idea was a bit fraught with danger with Schuster, not just because of the similar skill set to those guys I just mentioned, but also because of his age and his maturity levels. I just don't think that he was capable at that point in his career of being a guy that was being a playmaker in a first grade rugby league team. So I think for now, maybe they revisit it in a couple of years time or something, if he really takes his conditioning seriously and gets and can really adjust to the rigors of rugby league. And as you said, Joey, stays healthy and starts avoiding some of this injury luck, but maybe you can revisit it in a couple of years time. But I think definitely in the short term, it's the right move. And they're paying him 800 grand a year, whatever it is, but they've already paid him the money. Well, they've already committed to paying him the money. So he's there. So you may as well try and get the best out of him while he is there.
You go, Canberra.
What worries me though, you guys are making good points, but what worries me, I think second row has changed a little bit, even in just the 3 years since he had that great season there in 21. I think second row has low-key become one of the most physically demanding positions on the field. And I think there's a trend now towards sort of lighter, faster back rowers who are almost like centers. I think we're going to see a lot more slow centers and wingers move into the back row because it's becoming a much more athletically demanding position than it probably was a couple of years ago. And I just have worries about Schuster holding up there physically, especially since he's not really got the preseason in. It's so boring to hear, like, when you find out a guy's had a great year and you go, what was the difference? And it's so boring, but they always say, yeah, I got a great preseason in. The more that you learn about footy, the more you're around it and all that, the more you understand that good preseasons really do make a whole big difference. And it's a boring thing to hear because preseasons are boring by nature, but that's kind of how it works, you know? So I want Schuster to work. I'm a tremendous fan of him as a player and his talent. I want him to throw passes and never look where they're going. I want him to do chip kicks. I want him to do all sorts of crazy shit down that left edge. But just with the way that position's changed a little bit and just with the sort of physical track record he's got, I do have some concerns. And then I sort of have a bit of a wider concern. Like, he's been at Manly a long time. He's been at Manly since he was 14, right? And he's sort of been the future of the club that entire time. And I wonder if he's just gotten a little bit comfortable there. And I wonder if, like, if he got the right coach there, maybe things could change. But I actually think a change of scenery would do him really, really good. Obviously, that's not going to happen because he's on $4 million a season or whatever. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he's in the right environment to sort of find his best self as a player at the minute, you know?
Yeah, which boils down to what we've kind of already alluded to. We're not massively convinced by the coaching.
Yeah, yeah.
Which could be which is a bigger issue for Manly, but you talked about slow centres transitioning into slow second rowers, and Manly's got a couple of them. Brad Parker's going to end up in the second row this year.
Yeah.
Ben Turbo is already a slow second rower. If that is the future of rugby league, then
maybe then we're Manly back. Are on the cutting edge.
They're back, baby.
Yeah. The other big concern I've got is in the middle of the field. And I know that's one that you share. Jake Trbojevic is still a very capable player, still a strong defender, a good passer, great leader, all that sort of thing. He's not really a meter reader anymore. He averaged 72 meters per game last year. And it's okay. You need someone in the middle of the field who can distribute and lead the line in defense. That's all right. But then you need to offset that with some guys who can really churn up the yards and take you forward. And I thought Taniela Paseka was better last year. He averaged career highs in minutes, carries, and meters per game. It was 126 per game or something like that. But probably need a lot more from him because outside of that, like, you've got Josh Aloye, who I agree with you was disappointing last year. You've got Matt Lodge. You've got Tofoa Sipley. You've got Ethan Bullimore. You've got Aaron Woods. You've got Nathan Brown. You've got a lot of guys that, like,
might... You got a lot of guys.
Got a lot of guys, but I don't know if they have sort of like that stud running forward that you really, really need. If Paseka was your second best running forward, then you'd probably be in a good position. But yeah, so I have doubts about how they're going to be able to go up the middle, you know?
100%. And I mean, while I kind of joked Woodsy was the third best middle, I genuinely think he was towards the end of last year. But he was behind Matt Lodge, who... No one is gonna put their hand up and say I'm a fan of Matt Lodge. Like, that's just that puts a target on your back straight away. But he was.
It says something about you.
Exactly. And obviously he's out for, you know, at least the first half of the season, right? With an ACL injury. But in his one or one and a half games that he played, was clearly Manly's best middle.
Yeah,
he was actually very good and, like, disappointingly so, because it was the sort of one where you're like, I'm really disappointed that Manly signed this guy. And then he played well enough. I'm like, well, they're clearly going to re-sign him. And then he did his ACL and they still re-signed him.
Look, it's funny with Lodge. He's been through a lot of clubs now.
Yeah.
And he has a habit of starting really well there.
The first season was unreal.
Yeah, and then things kind of changed. But, like, remember how good he was when he had that half season with the Roosters?
Yeah.
Like, people were talking about him making the Kangaroo Tour. And, like, it was justified. He was playing that well, you know, and it was the same at Brizzy, where he nearly got in the Origin team, and that, like, he does have a quick start in him, but yeah, I got big concerns over Manly's pack.
Yeah, we can talk about something that I'm excited about with Manly.
Yeah, like, let's
legitimately excited.
Yeah, let's.
Tolukula is my guy.
Fuck yes, I'm with you on this. 100%.
I'm such a fan. When he, you know, what he had one or two games at fullback at the end of last year, and you're just like, fuck yeah, this guy is actually the bee's knees. Like he's rock solid. He needed. I felt like he's been on the cusp of a breakout year or a breakout performance for you know 18 months or something, and he had that against the Tigers, and plenty of players have had their breakout performance against the Tigers over the years, but I think he looks really good. You know, heaven forbid Turbo does go down with injury, I think it's a foregone conclusion that he is the guy that's going to step in now. They shouldn't persist with any obviously KO Weeks is gone, but they shouldn't ever go back to Garrick. Like, Cooler is your guy. If Turbo's out, he has to be that fullback option. I'm not going to entertain any Cooler to fullback straight away and Turbo into the centres. I'm just not going to
engage with that.
Those sort of questions with an answer. But he's one guy who I'm actually just like, there are no like qualifiers. I'm just excited about this guy. He's really good.
100% with you, dude. Like, you took the words right out of my mouth. I agree with you that Cole has sort of been on the verge of the breakout season for a couple of years now. And going back to what I said about preseasons, he's got three or four of them in now. And if you just look at how he looks from when he debuted to now, he's put on a lot of muscle. I think he's always been fast, but I think he's going to be a lot more powerful this year. I'm really, really keen to see how he goes. And if he... I don't know what they're going to do with, because Garrick's going to be the other centre, isn't he?
I think so. And then they'll have Saab and probably Paulo on the wings, yeah, I guess.
You know, not wild about those wingers, but say you get Kohler on that left side with Schuster and all of that, and the two of them linking up a lot. Yeah. I would like that. I would be very, very into that.
Potentially very exciting until everybody's crippled with injury by mid-April.
Very potential driven team, the Manly Seagulls. Is there anyone that
the ceiling is high? That's true.
Is there any young guys that maybe we don't know about, or listeners that don't follow Manly closely may not know about, who you think could be in for a big year? You can't say Latu Fainu, unfortunately.
Yeah, they're all at other teams. Probably the only guy who like hasn't played first grade who maybe could play first grade. His name's been around the traps for a little while, but Jamie Humphries is he could potentially fill in the halves at some point in the year if and when Cherry plays Origin. I'd imagine they'd go down the Jake Arthur kind of that sort of road, but it's possible he could slot in. With Latu gone, he's essentially like he's the next one that I assume they're blooding as the long-term replacement for Cherry, even though they messed him around a little bit last year and they slotted him at hooker and he's played a few different, and then they finished the year by moving back to halfback. So I don't exactly know what their plans are with him. He could potentially play off the bench, maybe, but I think that role probably should go to Gordon Chan Kum Tong, who could be the young guy if you want, but he played a handful of games at the end of last year. Looks pretty fun. I think people know him. He played in the preseason last year and was pretty good. Got called Mini Cheese and that sort of thing. Is an exciting option off the bench. Beyond that, I don't know. There's another Hopewadi.
Oh, is there really?
What's the relation?
There always is.
Oh, it's got to be a son. Hopper's got
son.
Like 12
John's kids.
Son?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Lehi.
What's his Lehi Hopewadi.
I've not watched him play, but he's a fullback. He played a bunch of Jersey Flag last year. I think he's 18 years old. He's meant to be.
Well, I'm sold.
Fast as
yeah,
fuck.
Mate, I'm in. Yeah. It's been too long since he's had a Hopewadi. We're coming up on... What, 4 or 5 years since Burton?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't feel right.
He obviously, big Hopper got put to rest for a couple of years, and yeah, we had to wait until
wait for the heat to die down.
Until where he came up, where he came along. But yeah, I mean,
yeah,
hopefully he's more along the Will Hopewadi path than any of the others, because Will was the only one who really did anything for Manly, and then he fucked off.
That's true. I'm with you on Gordy Three Names. I think I thought he was going to play more first grade last year.
He should have been.
I was surprised he didn't, man. I don't know why, but yeah, he's someone I'm super keen on. I don't know what they're doing with Jamie Humphries. Like, reading this off the club website, so it might, you know, take that with a grain of salt. It could all change tomorrow. But they seem to have got him pegged down as a hooker. They've gotten his bio that he's made a successful transition from halfback. He'll challenge established hooker Lachlan Croker and Gordy Threenames for the spot. So,
I mean, he could be, because halfway through last year, they turned him in. Like they stopped naming it halfback, started naming him at hooker. Like in New South Wales Cup for Blacktown and stuff as well. And then after the final news that he was going to the Tigers, suddenly he was popping back up at halfback. I'm like, do you have any idea what your plans are for the future? Anthony, what are your plans?
Yeah, and well, joining us now is Anthony Seibold to answer Joe's slanderous questions.
Oh, can you imagine?
No slander here, mate. This is factual.
He's just stating pure facts. I have got the Manly Seagulls at 13th on my ladder. Nicholas.
Joe, cover your ears.
Oh, no.
No, cover your ears, dog. I got him 15th.
Oof. Yeah, well.
Yeah.
So, everything that I've said, like the ceiling is, I said earlier, I think 6th to whatever is probably their absolute peak to me. They finished 12th last year. I'd feel comfortable saying that I think they're probably going to finish 10th to 12th again. I wouldn't be surprised if they slipped further down the ladder. The only place that I'll rule out is Wooden Spoon, because it's never happened to Manly and it never bloody will. Wow. Hopefully Zach sees before that comes across. But yeah, I mean, like if they slide to 15th, it's possible, man. Like you look at the things that we've said need to happen for Manly to have a good year, like all these guys to be injury free. If all those guys who are injury riddled are not injury free, then 15th is suddenly a very, very real possibility. Like the teams at the bottom, some of them are going to rise up.
Yeah,
you look at the Tigers, they're going to rise up.
I think the competition is going to have a higher average this year in terms of like the quality of teams. I actually think last year there was an inordinate amount of really bad sides. And I think this year there's going to be a lot of teams that are better. So even if Manly are the exact same as they were last season, I could see that slipping down the ladder because other teams are sort of rising up a little bit more. So
I'll say 10th.
Okay. Yeah. You get 3 entries into the team of the podcast sweepstakes on the roulette wheel. You can't pick number 6 or number 23. Every other number is available.
I'll go 00 for Melbourne Storm scoring the 2008 grand final.
Oh, fantastic. Love that.
I'll pick 11 for Steve Menzies.
Sure.
Good stuff. I like these. The themes of these numbers are strong.
And I'll pick 23 for the number of games Tom Trebouille.
I just said you can't pick 6 or 23.
22.
One rule.
22.
Literally. You had 36 options and you still managed to fuck it. Fantastic.
I'll go 22 for Turbo's games this year because he'll have a rest after Origin.
There we go. All right, he's working on the fly. That's good. All right, before we get out of here, quick thank you to the people in the top 2 tiers on our Patreon. If you'd like to support us, go to patreon.com/NRLRookies. You get extra shows every single week, entry into the Coltrane Cup, merchandise discounts, access to our Discord server, and plenty more. So thank you to Chris Avnell, Dave, Rocky and Rappy, Stu, Ashley and Martin, Broncos legend Adam Reynolds, Bruce the Pom, Butsy, Chewbacca, Snuffleupagus, Dan Cullinane, David, an anonymous backer, Ed Burton. He remains an Englishman. Hi, I'm Mitt Bertrand and I have redacted. I was saying Boo Earns. It's not worth winning if you can't win big. Jerome Luai, Hungy Pitt, Gift Fund, Jason Joe, Joel Wrigley, John, Josh Brandon, Kicks Outside the Comp, Lachlan Hancock, Luke Charles Smidmore, Mads Taylor's version, Matthew Duggan, Mr. Beefy, Morgan Watkins. My name is Nick Campton and rugby union is my favorite type of rugby. My ding ding dong is hard and I'm sad. Never trendy. Now 4 walls are your 24-hour day. Constant companions, Paul Mac 78, Reese Brown, Rodrigo Eduardo, goal. I can't yell or zoom, cuts my microphone out. Roxanne Clark, see you in Vegas, Shunta Ty, the black vegetable, the quiet man in the stand, Thor, Tom Hardy, Wads. We now have in charge several lotus and every listens, all listeners, please send $5 Australian at the Matt Bungard on twitter.com. And Westlife Podcast, West Tigers are back, baby. Thank you so much for listening to everyone in the lotus and everyone who listens. Thank you as well. Joseph, anything to promote?
No. not zero to promote. Just support your families. I don't know.
Oh, are we their families?
The
concept of breadwinning is that Joe wants to just give that a quick shout out.
be good to people who are good to you. That's all I want.
That's the words to live by.
That's something to get behind. Big thank you to everyone who is on the Patreon. We're looking to expand that this year, offer you guys a lot more stuff. It's going to be an exciting year on that front. So please log in and keep us above the poverty line, because that's a battle, man.
Nick will come to your house, do like basic like tiling, roofing, and maybe clean the floors, do some gardening, anything like that.
It'll be bad roofing. Like, I couldn't hammer a shingle together if my life depended on it, but I'll give it a try for you.
As long as you give it a crack, that's all they can ask of you.
Mate, I'll just give it a good old college try.
Babysitting, that's what I'm recruiting you for.
Oh, mate, you know I'd love to hang with ZB.
All right. Thank you, Bartosz. Say goodbye.
See you, guys.
Say goodbye, Campo.
Goodbye, Bertrand.
And it's goodbye from me.